Today we're week four in a series that I'm calling Close. And I guess the inspiration of this series is in the idea that it's possible for us to draw close to God. In fact, in James chapter 4, verse 8, it says, "Draw close to God, and He will draw close to you." And I guess as I come at this series, the very final series that I'll be doing here at Gisborne Church of Christ, the idea really is a summing up. It's a coming to the point of saying, what, if you like, has the last 10 and a half years of ministry here at the church been about? What has been the goal? What has been the hope that I've brought or tried to bring? And I think the idea for me is about, how do we encounter with Jesus? How do we grow close to Him each day, every day? Not just once every often, not just maybe once a decade or so, but how does it happen in that ongoing sense? And so over these 5 weeks, I've been opening up different aspects of what it looks like, I believe, for us to be able to draw close to God so that He draws close to us. The first week, we had a look at contributing with generosity. Then in the second week, we explored how living justly enables us to grow close to Jesus. Last Sunday, we looked at how being open to growing, that fresh revelation, the fact that we never quite make it, if we have that position and that posture of humility, much like what Mark was sharing about in his grandfather, it allows us to grow closer to Jesus. Today I'll be talking about how by sharing our faith we can grow closer to Jesus, and then next Sunday we'll be talking about how empowering others enables us to grow closer to Jesus. Now, not that long ago when I was in my early 20s, I was just trying to, put the feet in the water a little bit to discern whether God was actually calling me or not to, pursue Him into ministry. And I'd had this thought for a little while that maybe God had been saying something about being, set aside to serve Him in different ways. And so in order for me to put my toe in the water a bit, I did an internship with an organization that at the time was called Youth Ministries. It was a 12-month internship. It was 3 days a week, and you actually had to pay for the privilege to do it. Anyway, Youth Ministries then became known as Campus Crusade for Christ, which many of you will have heard of, and now they've changed their name again and they're called Power to Change. But anyway, it was a great time, this 12-month really formative experience of putting my toes in the ministry waters, sensing God say to me, "Yes, I am calling you into vocational ministry," and it was a really formative experience. Well, halfway through this year, we went on a mission trip. And the mission trip was to Sydney because we know that people in New South Wales really need saving, don't they? And so we went to Sydney for a week-long mission trip, and we did all these different things. We were prepared to do all these different things. So we were going to visit juvenile justice centres around Sydney. We were going to spend some time in homeless shelters and helping out at soup kitchens and places that fed the homeless. We were going to be based in and around Wayside Chapel, a very famous church in the King's Cross area of Sydney. And so we all met early one Monday morning, and we got in the cars, in about three cars, there was about nine of us all up, and we drove up to Sydney. It took us 12 hours to get there, and we got there, and then we decided to have some dinner, so we went to King's Cross, which was near where we were staying, and we went to the Bourbon and Beefsteak Bar. Now you may have heard that. That's where the NRL players go and get into all sorts of trouble. Very little good comes out of the Bourbon and Beefsteak Bar, as it were. And so we went there and had dinner, and while we're having dinner, the leader of the trip said, "Right, we're about to go out on our first activity." And this was news to all of us, because of course we expected to get a good night's sleep and then be able to wake up the next day and get in with what we knew we were doing, but here was a surprise. "What we're going to do," he said, "was after we've finished having dinner, enjoy your dinner, feed yourselves up, but after we've finished having dinner, we're going to go out into the streets of King's Cross, the main street there, it's William Street in King's Cross, Sydney, and we're going to go up to people and we're going to witness to them. We're going to share our faith with strangers in King's Cross." Cool, none of us thought. And all of a sudden within me grew this stress and this worry and this anxiety of all of a sudden being put on a spot where I'd have to go and share my faith in perhaps one of the more hostile places you could do so, at least in our nation. And as I started to experience this anxiety and this stress and this fear, I made a decision that I just wasn't going to do it. Because, of course, we're all familiar with that, aren't we? There's very few of us that when it comes to sharing our faith, whether it's in an environment like that or whether it's even just across the table from a family member or a friend who knows us really well, very few of us we'll be able to share our faith without experiencing some of that anxiety, some of that worry, some of that stress and that fear. Now, this passage which Jude has just read out describes a culture and a context in Athens where it was very difficult to actually go and share your faith. Paul Barnett, the biblical scholar, biblical New Testament scholar, writes about the Athenian culture in this context of the time, and he says they were multicultural, they were religiously pluralistic, they were entertainment mad, they were sexually decadent, and they were anxiety ridden. And when I read Barnett's description of Athenian culture, I thought to myself, sounds a bit familiar, really, doesn't it? Multicultural, religiously pluralistic, where there's no absolute truth. In fact, the only absolute truth is that you cannot claim an absolute truth. Sexually decadent, entertainment mad, and anxiety ridden. Could be describing our culture in Victoria and in Australia. And so in Acts chapter 17, when Paul comes and he connects with these group of Athenians, these philosophers and these people that are interested in things around spirituality, and he actually starts sharing his faith with them, I think that there's much that we can take from this passage when it comes to what does it look like for us to be sharing our faith with those around us today. You see, this passage in Acts chapter 17 is quite different to the other passages in Acts where the gospel is shared and presented and where Luke, the author of Acts, actually records what is said when the gospel is presented. And so we have this quite unique gospel presentation, really. There's no quoting of scripture in this gospel presentation of Paul in Acts chapter 17. Most of the other gospel presentations in Acts actually quote Old Testament scripture a lot. There's no real pronouncing of judgment here in Acts chapter 17. There's no real focus on the time that is to come. Rather, the focus is on the time before, the first things, not the last things. There's some real distinctives here, and as we unpack it, I think it will help us when it comes to what does it look like for us to be sharing our faith with our families, with our friends, with our neighbours, in our context today. The first thing that I want to highlight from Acts chapter 17 is that Paul discusses. You see, the other gospel presentations throughout Acts are much more of a monologue. And yet we see what's happening here in Acts chapter 17 is that it's a dialogue, it's not a monologue. Verse 21, Luke describes it. He says, the Athenians and all the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. They loved to talk about, they loved to listen. See, it was a two-way thing. It wasn't just someone coming and saying, here we go, I've got all this information for you, have it. It was actually a conversation. It was a talking about. It was a listening. It was a back and forth. If you've been around church world for any length of time, and I was a person, an individual that grew up in the church, and I remember as a teenager and young adult, whenever we went off to do any evangelical or evangelistic training, like it sounds terrible, doesn't it? To go and do training, how to share your faith. And what we were taught is inevitably, this is how you do it, and it was a monologue. This is what you say. You just give them all this information. And yet here we have Paul actually having a discussion, because even though we have Paul's gospel presentation in this passage of Acts chapter 17, it's in the context of a bigger picture, which is a conversation, a back and forth, a dialogue, not a monologue. I love Alpha, and I've grown to love Alpha actually quite recently. I had an experience of Alpha many, many years ago, which wasn't entirely positive, and so I guess I scrubbed it for a while. But what I love about Alpha, what I've come to love about Alpha, as we as a church have done it over the last few years, is that it's very much a dialogue. It's a sitting around a table and people come and there's an opportunity to ask any question, to make any comment, to express any opinion without judgment. And it's in the midst of that conversation and that dialogue that people actually are able to come to faith. Now, as I finish up this chapter of ministry for me, the 10 and a half years that I've been at Gisborne Church of Christ, I look back and I don't have any regrets. But there's a few things I would do differently. And one of the things that I would do differently is that we would have started Alpha sooner than what we did. Paul discusses. The sharing of faith happens through dialogue, not monologue. The second thing that I think we can draw out of this passage is that Paul affirms the context and the culture of the day. In verse 22, he stands up in this meeting of the people of Areopagus and he says, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious." He's actually affirming something in them here. He's commenting, he's saying, "You're very religious. This is actually a good thing." Because in that, there's an openness to the things of God. There's an openness to learning and exploring new ideas and new concepts. Too often, I fear that the church pronounces judgment on people as opposed to affirm the good, dare I say it, the godly, that is already there. Over the last few weeks, I've had a number of conversations with people in our local community. People who have rung me up or I've bumped into in the street and they've heard that I'm moving on and they just, very nice of them, expressed some gratitude and commented about, you know, it's been great to have you here and thank you. And these people that have commented have been people that I've had, and I know other people from our church have had really significant conversations. People that have actually moved closer to Jesus through the ministry of this church. And I look at why that is and what has caused that. And I think it's because this church has actually affirmed what they're doing in our community. They've seen the good. They've seen the godly, even the unknowingly godly stuff. And it's been affirmed. So often, might be one of them now. Just ringing again. Just tell them I'm busy, Greg. Thanks. But they've affirmed. They've been affirmed. And whenever we've seen something as a church, whenever we've seen someone in the community doing something to help people that are on the margins, people that are isolated, people that are lonely, people that are doing tough, or just people that are providing community, or whatever it is, those kingdom of God values, those godly things, we've tried to affirm that. There's been times when we've supported those things financially. There's been times when we've volunteered and we've helped out at different things and different places. And so these people that are ringing up and saying thank you, I really think it's a response to the affirmation that they've been given by this church. So we need to be very careful. We need to hold off on pronouncing judgment. But whenever we see something that is of God, we should affirm it and nurture it and encourage it. The third thing that I want to highlight from Acts chapter 17 around how Paul goes about sharing his faith here to the Athenians is that he observes. Paul observes. Verse 23, it says, "For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with its inscription to an unknown God." One of the things I think we need to do when it comes to sharing our faith is to look carefully. To look carefully at people's situations and circumstances. To look carefully for what God might be up to, for how God might already be leading them to Him, as to how we can partner with Him. When I started here at the church, I was studying at the time. I was studying for a graduate diploma in the arts at Eastern College, which is a Bible college in Melbourne. And I had a mission studies major, and as part of that study, I needed to write a research paper, a 6,000-word research paper. And the research paper was asking me to look carefully at my local context. What were those things, those cultural markers, if you like, that we as a church could speak into for the sake of sharing our faith, for sharing the good news of Jesus with others? And as a result of that research, I came up with 6 different things, and we as a church have, over the time, lived into these cultural markers. I'll give you a few examples. One of the cultural markers that I discovered as part of the context and culture of the Macedon Rangers was very much about around food. Both the growing of food, the cooking and preparing of food, and the enjoyment of food. There's a strong culture around food in the Macedon Rangers. And so, in part, the community garden is a response to that cultural marker that we observed 10.5 years ago, the growing of food. We've done other things around food, harvest festivals, other things that we've explored, this idea around food, and that's given us opportunities to get alongside people and for God to be shared in it. Another one is families. Though not everyone in the Macedon Rangers comes from the traditional nuclear family, there is a strong sense around the importance of family in our community. And so we as a church have tried wherever possible to support families. Initially, when I was here, it was through playgroups and mainly music. And then more latterly, it's been through things such as Scouts, our youth ministry, which has grown amazingly over the last couple of years. Other things that we've done, but there's this been strong investment in family. And it's come about as a result of the fact that we've looked carefully at the culture. Sport is huge in our local community. Before I was called to the church, I was invited to come and preach, and so Kate and I drove up, and we got here early, so we went to just look around town. Sort of, we hadn't yet got the job officially. It was sort of like a extended job interview, I guess. And so I was going to preach and see whether you wanted me or not. I don't remember what I preached on, actually, and I don't even think I preached that well, but you were very gracious and called me anyway. But we got up there, and it was sort of, I think it was about April, May, that sort of time of year. And we drove around the local sporting ovals. And we saw what must have been like, at least at that time, half of Gisborne gathering around local sporting ovals, footy or soccer or whatever else they were doing. And we as a church were meeting here at 10 a.m. And so we knew that we needed to do something about that, even from that early time, that there was a whole a mission field around sport in our local community. And even the time that we met for church conflicted with that a little bit. So we had a go at creating a 5 p.m. service. And since, we've had a go at creating a 6:30 young adults themed service. A couple of things that we've explored, ideas in order to help reach out to those who wouldn't usually come here on a Sunday morning. But not just that, we've encouraged you to get involved in sport in our area. And there's been times when we've gone down to help the footy club by manning the gate and welcoming people into the ground. But there's other people here that have coached junior sports teams. There's people here that have got on committees of junior sporting things. All of that sort of stuff, because it's a significant cultural marker by which we can get in and build relationship to share the gospel. So Paul discusses, he affirms, he observes. And the other thing that Paul did wherever he went, whether it was to the Athenians or the Jews or other people, wherever he traveled, he always invited people to consider Jesus. When we first decided to run Alpha, Cliff Fielding, who's the church relationship manager for Alpha, came and did some training for us. And he made this comment that just really stuck with me. And he said, whenever you invite someone, even if they say no, you're actually drawing them closer to Jesus. Because you're causing them to think. You're causing them to think about where they're at, and they're confronted. Even in asking of the question, even in the invitation, they're confronted with that reality. Is that someone else from the community ringing there? But it's this idea of the power of the invitation. The power of the invitation to people to consider Jesus. This week I came across some research put out by NCLS. If we can go to that next slide. Thanks, Caitlin. And this is a bit of a summary of that research. Now NCLS is the National Church Life Survey. A few comments about NCLS before I talk about the research. NCLS are Australian. So this is Australian research. This is not American research. This is Australian research. This is our context, our situation. They're also reputable. They've been around for a long time. And there's a discipline, a research discipline around what they do. And so you can rely on what they say. And the other element of this research is that it's current. It was actually done last year. And what this research found was that if we were to invite our family and friends, these are people that we know, if we were to invite our family and friends to church, then 37% of them are likely to say yes. That's 4 out of 10, 2 out of 5, whatever you want to work it out with your maths. That's astonishing to me. Because I thought that figure would actually be far, far less. Maybe 5% or lower. That's what I would have guessed. But almost 40% of people have indicated that if someone was to invite them to church, a friend or a family member that they knew and they trusted, they're likely to say, yes, I'll come. And it speaks to me of a spiritual hunger that is in our nation right now. With everything that's gone on over the last 12 months, with all the questions that that causes, there's this spiritual hunger, I believe. What does it all mean? Because surely just the getting of more stuff is not it. Surely having a really good job is not it. Surely having the best education is not it. They're the questions that the last 12 months have caused. What does it all mean? And where is God in the midst of it? Almost 40% of our friends and family would say yes. According to this research, would say yes if we invited them to come to church. I want to finish up by sharing the ending of the story that I started with today. And maybe if the worship team would like to come up at this moment of time, that would be great too. So those that know me know that I can be a pretty strong person when I need to be. Some would say that it's stubbornness or obstinance. I would just say that it's strength of character, but I'll leave it up to you to decide which it is. But there's a determination there, and if someone's going to ask me to do something I don't want to do, it's going to be pretty hard for them to get me to do that thing, whatever it is. And so on this night, I dug my toes in, and there's about 8 or 9 of us there with the leader, and I just had it out, and in front of everyone, I said, I'm not doing it. I refuse to do it. I'll do everything else you've prepared us for, but I'm not doing this thing because I don't believe we should share our faith without it being already in the context of relationship. Now, was I right? I probably was, actually. I think I was, anyway. And the leader said to me, well, that's okay. You can say you don't want to do it. You can make that choice. But in making that choice, you're also catching the next plane home. And I guess part of that strength of character is that I'm not a quitter, and so there's no way I was going home. So I thought, I've got to do this. I'm just going to have to do it. And we walked out of that bar after dinner. We walked down the steps out into the street of King's Cross. And I felt like everyone on the team was watching to see what I'd do. Because we just had it out, you know. Was I going to go up and talk to anyone, or was I going to try and slink away and be anonymous for the few hours that we were doing this? And I made the decision that, well, now that I'm in boots and all. And so out of the group of 8 or 9, I was the first person to go and talk to someone. I went straight down that steps. There was a bus stop there, and I went up to this guy who was with his girlfriend at the time, and I started chatting with him. I talked a bit about life, talked a bit about faith, talked a bit about what they were planning on doing that night. Just general conversation. We got to the point that we'd been told we had to do as the conversation was coming to an end, and it seemed like we'd run out of things to say, and we'd covered a few things of faith and life, and I'd shared my testimony and all that sort of stuff. And the last question before we finished the conversation was, can I pray for you and would you like to believe in Jesus? And of course, my anticipation was that I would get this question out and this person would say no, and then I'd move on. At least I've done it, you know, I've got it done. So I asked him the question. I said, would you like to believe in Jesus? He said, yes. Yes. And I went, what? Really? What do I do then? I don't know. And so I prayed with him and with his girlfriend. I don't know where that guy is. I've never seen him since. But on that night, he said yes to Jesus. And God blessed something that even in my mind says, you know, you don't do it that way. God still blessed it because God is bigger than any of our techniques or our desire to get it right or to do it right. I want to encourage you today. But as you think about these things, and as you think about, could I share my faith with those around me? Could I say something to someone about what Jesus means to me? And even if in the midst of that thought, there's a fear and an uncertainty and a worry that starts to emerge, that's actually good. Because you're not meant to have it all together. You're not meant to be totally in control. You're not meant to be the most amazing, gifted, wonderful person. We're all broken people. All of us. Even Paul, who spoke these words to the Athenians at another time, to the church in Corinth, would say to God, your grace is sufficient for me. Your strength made perfect in weakness. You see, it's in our weakness that God's grace is able to flow the most. It's when we're able to and prepared to put it out there, to push the fear, to push the worry, to push the anxiety to one side and just put it out there. That's the space that we see God at work. As my head hit the pillow that night, I'd never felt closer to Jesus than what I had at that moment in time. And I knew then, I knew like I knew, that God was calling me into ministry, to serve Him, wherever that may be, with all that I've got.